chicken was down to 62 below, and Fort Yukon the last couple of mornings has come in at 60 and 61 below.
The cold snap shows no signs of letting up in the interior. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, the 5th of January. Good evening, I'm Duncan Moon. Also tonight, young Alaskans gather in Girdwood to talk about the state's future.
We have common interests. We want to make changes. We want Alaska to be the last frontier. We want Alaska to be great.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Providing statewide news coverage since 1978, we are the Alaska Public Radio Network, APRN, your source for Alaska's news.
Cross-country skiers in Anchorage for the national championships finally got the chance to race this afternoon. Temperatures well below zero postponed the competition both Saturday and Sunday. Today, women skated a 3-mile course and men skied 6 miles. Anchorage skier Keegan Rangel came in second, 3 seconds behind Midwest racer Caitlin Compton. Chris Freeman of New Hampshire won the men's race, about 50 seconds ahead of Montana's Leif Zimmerman. Event spokesman John Quinley says it was great to finally have a race after the weekend's cancellations.
This is what everybody's here for and what we've all been waiting for. And the temperatures moved up. At the start of the women's race, it was 1 degree on the scoreboard. And great sunshine and just wonderful competition. We had hundreds of skiers out there participating. So this is what we've all been waiting for.
The temperature cutoff for racing is 4 below. Quinley says it's a safety issue for the skiers.
They're just pulling in such a volume of sub-zero air that at some point that just is not good for their health over the long term. And, if we can wait for a day or two and get slightly warmer temperatures, that's just better for everybody.
The national championships continue tomorrow with 10 and 15-kilometer classic races. On Wednesday, the individual sprint races are scheduled, with the team sprint on Thursday. The same cold snap that delayed the races in Anchorage isn't letting up in the interior of Alaska. National Weather Service meteorologist Corey Bogel in Fairbanks says a high-pressure ridge continues to pump frigid air from the Yukon Territory. He says the cold mass is holding steady.
It looks like we're going to have another fairly cold week in store for the area. We're not really seeing any change in the weather pattern at all through the middle of the week, through at least Wednesday or Thursday. We're continuing to expect temperatures to kind of hang out in a pretty tight temperature range between about 40 and 55 below in most of the valleys.
Bogel says the cold snap that began after Christmas produced the chilliest readings of the season in the interior yesterday.
The coldest we've seen during this whole outbreak, which has been, we're kind of like in day 9 of the outbreak right now, would be O'Brien Creek, which is out along the Taylor Highway. And they were 65 below yesterday morning. And they've had a few days now with lows between 60 and 65 below. Another spot over there, Chicken, was down to 62 below. And Fort Yukon, the last couple of mornings, has come in at 60 and 61 below.
Bogel says Fairbanks area temperatures bottomed out somewhat warmer yesterday, but were still the coldest so far this winter.
At the airport was 45 below. Down in the Rosie Creek area, 55 below. The Woodsmoke subdivision, which is in North Pole, has also been down to 55 below. And many reports, in the valleys, around Fairbanks between 50 and 55 below the last few days.
The cold snap's extended duration is taking a toll on area residents, but Bogel says Fairbanks has been consistently about 10 degrees short of daily record lows and is still far from breaking the record for successive days at minus 40 or colder. An advisory is in effect for dense ice fog and near zero visibility in the Fairbanks North Pole area. Ice fog over the weekend forced postponement of the Fairbanks fireworks show to celebrate the 50th anniversary of Alaska's statehood. The show will be rescheduled. Bogel says long-range forecast models show a chance for some moderation in the cold weather pattern later this week. In Anchorage, it was an historic weekend. Like other communities, residents celebrated the 50th anniversary of the signing of the Proclamation for Alaska Statehood. But there was also an historic occasion for the municipality itself. KSK Lynn Anderson explains.
I do solemnly swear or affirm.
I do solemnly swear or affirm
that I will support.
A little after 11 o'clock Saturday morning in the mayor's conference room on the eighth floor of City Hall, Matt Klayman became Anchorage's new mayor. Moments before, Mark Begich had officially resigned. Klayman will serve until Begich's second term would have ended on July 1st.
Discharge my duties.
And that I will faithfully discharge my duties
as acting mayor of the municipality of Anchorage.
As acting mayor of the municipality of Anchorage.
Klayman is, or was, chair of the Anchorage Assembly. The municipal charter calls for the chair to assume the position should the elected mayor become unable to continue his or her term. Saturday was the first time in the history of the municipality that a sitting mayor has resigned while in office. Tomorrow in Washington, D.C., Begich takes his oath as Alaska's new junior senator. In his final remarks as mayor, Begich praised the state of the city.
Anchorage is in great shape. Certainly we face challenges from keeping our economy healthy to keeping the public safe. But in contrast to many lower 48 cities, which were suffering terribly from the international financial crisis, Anchorage is stable, thriving, and diversified.
Just before his resignation, Begich distributed a nearly 100-page 2008 transition report listing perceived municipal strengths and challenges. The new mayor hadn't had a chance to read the report, but could identify what he regarded as the broadest task facing the city.
We really need to make sure we keep moving forward, work on the positive things that have been done in this administration, and not move backwards.
If not backward movement, Klayman's six-month departure from the Assembly could produce some occasional legislative blockage. Much Assembly business produces more tweaking than disagreement, but some key issues over the last year have passed by meager 6-5 margins, with Klayman part of that slender majority edge. 5-5 ties have become a distinct possibility. Now, without an Assembly vote and the power of the chair, Mayor Klayman will put more emphasis than ever on his powers of persuasion.
Part of my commitment has always been to working with the entire Assembly. When I was on the Assembly, there were 11 different visions of how to move Anchorage forward in a positive way. And I'll keep doing that, and I'll keep working with the Assembly, meeting with Assembly members and talking with them about things.
The Assembly's new vice chair, Harriet Drummond, takes over chair duties. Her first stint with the gavel takes place at tomorrow evening's regular Assembly session. Klayman says he still hasn't decided if he will try and make his new interim position permanent by running for the mayor's office in the April election. But he is promising a decision fairly soon.
Before the end of the month, I'll make that decision. I'm certainly interested, but haven't made a final decision.
If he does run, he'll join a field of 9 other mayoral hopefuls. Klayman was elected to the Anchorage Assembly in 2007. His current term ends in 2010. For KSKA, this is Len Anderson.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the strange death of Wills Rogers in a plane crash near Barrow.
I suppose you could say that he benefited everybody in a way that is most rare and extraordinary.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Providing statewide news coverage since 1978, we are the Alaska Public Radio Network, APRN, your source for Alaska's news.
A group of 55 young people are gathering in Girdwood this week for the Conference of Young Alaskans. The delegates are coming up with plans for shaping the future of the state in several different areas, including the economy, the environment, and education. Bayou Moore is a 24-year-old college student from Dillingham who is a delegate. She says when she first heard about the conference, she got excited.
They said leadership conference, and I was like, I can do it. I have a loud voice. I love people of all different types. And so I wanted to come in and put my voice in and hopefully represent a wide, array of people that are from my community.
What specific issues are you working on today, Abayu?
Today, my big thing is natural resources and environment. I'm from Bristol Bay, And one of the most controversial issues right now is the Pebble Mine. The smaller villages, it seems like people, the smaller areas, rural Alaska, people are kind of quiet about it, especially like the young people. They're too shy to speak up and to jeopardize our food and our water by putting a mine in there that may potentially pollute, you know, everything that we live off of subsistence-wise. I'm really passionate about it, and I want to get the word in. You guys, urban areas, listen to us. We love our way of life. Please, please let us have a say in how we manage our land.
All right, well, let me ask you what the highlight has been for you personally at this conference, Abayu.
The highlight is just opening my doors to new ideas, I guess. I sometimes can fall into tunnel vision where, especially about mining, where I'm like, hey, I subsist. I don't want any sort of pollution to happen and to, that would wreck my way of life. But then it's nice to hear people who have, who are pro-development, but then there are other ways to develop the land and resources in healthy ways, which is not saying that I'm open to mining, but just using Chena Hot Springs as an example on how they're using geothermal technology to heat and power their entire business and operation up there. Development isn't always a bad thing. There are safe ways to do it if you can keep in mind the waste that you're going to be putting out. So just being able to interact with a whole different group of people that I normally wouldn't hang out with.
So it's doing something for you right now, but tell me what you think the conference will do. What lasting impact will it have for the state?
Well, it's connecting leaders. We get to do all of these different polls, and one of the questions was, how many people are going to return to Alaska? And 80% of us said, this is where we want to be. And knowing that, you know, a whole group of leaders and connections that are going to help you overcome any sort of barriers that are holding you back from making changes. So me being from a rural community, when I want to talk to someone in Anchorage, I know like a whole new group of people that are going to help me, and we have common interests. We want to make changes. We want Alaska to be the last frontier. We want Alaska to be great. And so for me, it's just all the new connections and knowing a whole different group of leaders that I've never had exposure to.
Abayu Moore is a delegate at the Conference of Young Alaskans in Girdwood. The meeting wraps up tomorrow. Asipta Teen, whose artistic skills were recognized over the weekend, will soon see her talent flying Alaska skies. Sitka High junior Hannah Hamburg won the grand prize in the Alaska Airlines Paint the Plane competition, open to all Alaskans in grades K through 12. Hamburg's winning design was unveiled Saturday as part of Alaska's 50th statehood celebration in Anchorage and will adorn an Alaska Airlines 737 sometime later this year. KCAW's Bonnie Sue Hitchcock reports.
17-year-old Hannah Hamburg says she saw the ad for the Paint the Plane competition in a newspaper while on a family ferry trip to Juneau. And because art is second nature to her, she started brainstorming right away.
As far as I can remember, I've been drawing, and it's something I like to do. My good friend Aaron Bastel and I used to spend a lot of time just drawing and making up stories to go along with our pictures for fun. And we have a cabin in Prince of Wales, and to like entertain myself, I draw a lot of the time. So I think drawing's been a big part of my life.
Yeah, she's just drawn a lot since she was little. She'll just go off and draw for a couple hours at a time, and I think it was just all that practice over the years that, you know, gave her the skills that she has now.
Hannah's dad, Barth Hamburg, says not only does Hannah excel in art, she also had an eye for some of the parameters around this particular competition.
She really understood when she was making the drawing on the plane what it took to make it graphically read on an airplane, because she started out with more images, and then she said, no, these are going to be too small, they're not going to really show up, and so she kind of reduced it, and she thought a lot about what kind of symbols would be icons that would represent the state, and so she came up with the bear and the ferry, which was really neat. It was great being from Southeast to see the ferry on there.
Hannah's design includes a musher on the plane's tail being pulled by a humpback whale and a canoe with figures rowing on one side of the plane, while the lead sled dog occupies the nose. The face of the dog wraps around to the other side of the plane, which includes the state ferry and a bear and the musher again. Hannah says Alaska Airlines made a few changes to her original design, but not many.
I had the humpback was right behind the canoe, and the way I made the rope wrap around the whale looked like it was lassoing it. So they had to change that because they thought they'd get some complaints about it. And they had to add a flag on for like legal reasons, which actually incorporated onto the sled to make it look like it was part of the art, which was cool.
The colors of the original design will also be different, mainly for maintenance and upkeep reasons. But Hannah says it looks a lot like the way she drew it. And she says because there were so many really good entries, there were a couple things the judges were looking for to push the odds in her favor. One was her theme, "We're all pulling together."
It represented how Alaskan people work together to get things done or help each other.
Hannah and her family have known for a month that hers was the winning entry, but the rest of the state didn't find out until it was unveiled Saturday by Governor Sarah Palin at the statehood ceremonies in Anchorage. Hannah says it was hard not even being able to tell her best friends about it, especially her drawing buddy, Aaron Vestola, who says he's not surprised Hannah won.
I was really proud because I thought that I knew she had it in her to win, and I saw her artwork, and I thought it was really impressive and a good design.
But Vestola says he was surprised about the way he found out that Hannah had won.
She called me from Anchorage and said, Aaron, they haven't announced the winner of the Paint the Plane contest yet. Can you go onto the website and tell me what it says? So I pulled up the website, and there's this picture of her. And I said, oh my gosh, Hannah, you won. You're the grand prize winner. And she said, I know. I've known for a month.
Hannah says she likes drawing cartoony sort of art, and she's been inspired by family friend and artist Ray Troll over the years. She says this experience has made her think a little more about an artistic future.
I wasn't really considering doing art as a profession, but winning this contest definitely made me think more about pursuing a career in art just because, I don't know, I've seen where it can take me and it's really exciting.
To see Hannah's winning design and designs from the other finalists, go to painttheplane.com. In Sitka, I'm Bonnie Sue Hitchcock.
These are some seldom heard sounds of winter in Alaska. They're the calls of bowhead whales recorded underwater and under ice in the Bering Sea. University of Washington researcher Kate Stafford says it's probably male bowhead singing, either to attract females or ward off other males. The recordings came from hydrophones anchored beneath the sea ice between St. Lawrence and St. Matthew Islands. Stafford says the hydrophones enable researchers to gain a glimpse into the dark and ice-covered world of bowhead whales in the dead of winter. In addition to the bowheads, here are the sounds of walrus singing in the dark, also beneath the ice of the Bering Sea. Walruses dive from ice over shallow outer continental shelf in search of clams and other food on the sea floor. Female walruses and their young traditionally use the ice as a moving diving platform. They ride the ice north as it recedes in spring and summer, first in the northern Bering Sea, then into the Chukchi Sea off Alaska's northwest coast. The Center for Biological Diversity sued the federal government in December to force it to consider listing the walrus as a threatened species.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The Alaska Public Radio Network promotes Alaska's cultures, regions, and ethnic diversity, including a commitment to informing and empowering Alaska's Native peoples.
A Southeast Alaska dance group will be part of the inauguration festivities in Washington, D.C. The Juneau-based Herring Rock Dancers will perform at several Native American events held in conjunction with President-elect Barack Obama's swearing-in. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
Members of the Yao Te Yi dance group rehearse at Juneau's Alaska Native Brotherhood Hall. They're preparing for performances that are part of festivities around the January 20th inauguration. Fausto Paulo holds a painted drum as he watches other members tally up proceeds from a fundraising raffle.
My drum is made by Henry Adams. It represents my Yakutat tribe. This is the Moon House, humpback salmon, Graven, Mount St. Elias.
Yao Te Yi, or Herring Rock Dancers, is based in Juneau. but its members come from or have roots in Angoon, Hoonah, and other Southeast communities. Mary Ebona Miller creates some of the group's regalia.
I've taken classes from our auntie's house, and I've learned to sew a lot of the regalia. And I've been going on 10 years or so. Do a lot of the beading, a lot of the blankets and the bibs and the aprons.
Yao Tei Yi has about 50 members. About 25 will head for the nation's capital to perform Tlingit song and dance at the National Museum of the American Indian and a separate youth powwow. They'll also be part of the American Indian inaugural ball and other events. Dance group leader Andy Ebona says everyone is excited to be part of the celebration of Obama's presidency.
A lot of us were rooting for Barack Obama in his bid for the presidency, and some of us even went to the convention in Denver, and everybody's really, really psyched up to be a part of the events that are going on. And
tell me what hopes you have for the Obama administration.
The quality of people that he is selecting to be a part of his administration, I think, is just absolutely phenomenal. They're top-notch people, and obviously because of the economy and the two wars that we're involved in, there is a lot to do. But he seems to be addressing a lot of those issues and a lot of those concerns, and I think that he's going to do a lot of tremendous things for this country.
At least 5 million people are expected to come to Washington for the inauguration and associated events. Public officials have warned that it will be cold and crowded, with limited transportation and few restrooms. Dance group members have been advised to stay in their hotel rooms and watch the ceremony on TV. But Gerald Maeda says it may be hard to stay away.
I think that's a pretty special event that we're going to be part of over there, and hope we get the chance to get as close as we can to what's going on, but we'll see. You know, it's going to be pretty busy over there.
At least part of the trip will be familiar. Yao Tei Yi performed before at Washington's Indian Museum. Members have also traveled to California, New Zealand, and other locations to sing, dance, and discuss their culture. This is Ed Schoenfeld reporting from Juneau.
On August 15, 1935, comedian and actor Will Rogers died in a plane crash just south of Barrow. He was on an around-the-world flight with pilot Wally Post when the plane's engine failed on takeoff. John Walsh recounts the incident in a new book called When the Laughing Stopped, The Strange, Sad Death of Will Rogers. Walsh told APRN's Lori Townsend it's hard to underestimate the impact Rogers' death had across the country.
I looked up 50 or 60 or 70 different newspapers all across the country. Every single one of them had a banner headline about Rogers' death. And then the interior pages, two or three interior pages, were covered with stories about Rogers. It was the most amazing thing. I knew when I started that he was very famous. But when I went through all these newspapers, I really got to know how big he was. He was the biggest name in the entertainment industry of his time.
The book is dedicated to the Barrow man who saw the crash and was the first to tell about it. Tell us about that.
The airplane came down. Before the crash, it came down. They landed. They were lost. They came down, landed on a lagoon just west of Barrow, and they came down because they saw this man, this Eskimo. He was out hunting, Clare Okpiaha, and they came down to ask him the way to Barrow, which sounds very strange, but that's part of the story. And he spoke to them, and he told them where it was. He was the only one to be close enough to see the crash, because after they spoke to him, Rogers and Post spoke to Clare Okpiaha. They got back in the plane, took off to go to Barrow, and they were not up only about 200 feet when the engine quit.
There was criticism at the time of the crash that Wiley Post was largely to blame for it. What did your research find in that respect?
Well, I'm sorry to have to report that that is true. Wiley Post was a great aviator. He had twice gone around the world, once by himself, and set records and that sort of thing. Great aviator. But in this case, he was in too much of a hurry to get on to do something else. And so he sort of hurried through this holiday that he was taking Will Rogers on in Alaska. And yes, it was his fault. He hurried. He flew when he should not have flown because there was fog and the weather conditions were extremely bad. And that is what led to the final crash in which they both died.
There was a bizarre twist to this story that involved Roger's daughter, Mary. In the prologue, you said that you thought, in a way, her fate was the saddest and strangest of all. Why is that?
At the time that he died in the crash up in Alaska, she was on stage in a summer stock company up in Maine. And she was actually, now this is incredible, she was actually at the moment of his death, or pretty close to it, within minutes of his actual death in Alaska, she was in Maine on the stage acting in a play about plane crashes. You can't get more incredible than that. You can't get stranger than that. Of course, the sad thing is, the really mournful thing is, that when she did find out about it the next morning, it had a terrible effect on her. The descriptions of her as just sitting there stunned, not even talking, not crying. Anyway, even though she had a very promising career, and she tried her best, she tried to do a Broadway show, she got through it, she was given a movie contract with 20th Century Fox. She was actually started to make a picture called The Last Slaver. And in the middle of the picture, she had a nervous breakdown. She couldn't go on any further. At that point, she quit the acting business forever and never again went on a stage.
Well, beyond his ability to make people laugh, what else was he known for that benefited others?
I suppose you could say that he benefited everybody in a way that is most rare and extraordinary. He made people think. He really did make people think, especially about public affairs and politics and all the rest of that. He made them think because he made them laugh at the same time. Now, that is a very rare combination, and that's an ability that you hardly ever find.
John Walsh is the author of When the Laughing Stopped, The Strange, Sad Death of Will Rogers. The book is published by the University of Alaska Press. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Len Anderson in Anchorage, Bonnie Sue Hitchcock in Sitka, and John Ryan and Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineers are Gooseberry Peter and Dave Waldron. John Prophet is our webmaster. And I'm Duncan Moon. Have a good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. Didn't quite catch that report? Want to hear it again? APRN can be heard on the web at www.aprn.org.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.